The Florida community of mindfulness is happy to make these talks available to you. If you find this talk to be a benefit, please consider making a donation to support us. You'll find a donation button on the talks section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. Thank you, and may you be happy and free of suffering.
Thank you for coming. Actually, this weekend, our community has a retreat going on at the Franciscan Center, and this is the one retreat in a year that I'm not sort of there in residence. Angie and Brian are guiding, and I just come in the evening for the two-hour meditation in the evening to be with the retreatants and to interact with them. And the retreat is about sort of ending personal suffering through the practices of loving kindness and compassion. So these are wonderful teachings, wonderful practices, and they really get at the heart, we might say, of Buddhist psychology, as opposed to Western psychology that believes the way to happiness is by working through all your issues. With the idea that somehow the end result of that will be something positive. Buddhist psychology, while not negating that suffering needs to be dealt with, posits that the cultivation of positive, wholesome mind states in and of itself is transformative. Because we only have one mind, even though it may feel like it's divided into pieces and parts, there's only one mind. And if you have a healthier mind, if you're consuming healthier mind states, that creates a strength in the mind that in and of itself can take care of much of the affliction that is within us. In the same way, if we have a healthy body, a healthy immune system, then lots of the physical ailments that we might have had sort of take care of themselves as we strengthen and develop our well-being and health of body. It doesn't mean that there may not be some things that need to be taken care of, but the general, there's a strength in that. When you have a strong immune system, many of the things, the afflictions of the body that affect other people will not affect you because you have a strong body, strong immune system. And so we want to cultivate this kind of mind that is fundamentally healthy. And the more we have a healthy mind, that healthy mind is better able to take care of the parts of ourselves that aren't healthy. But if we don't have a healthy mind, when unhealthy mind states arise, we have very limited capacity to really heal and transform, take care of those parts. So this is very fundamental. So what I wanted to do is continue, and this relates to also the retreat where we have many members today. Focusing this weekend again on these wonderful teachings and practices of loving kindness and compassion. But at the same time in our community, we have an intensive going on these mind trainings, and I've given teachings on this in the past. In the Tibetan, they're called the Lojong. There are these 58 stanzas or slogans, very pith teachings that take so much that's fairly complicated in Buddhism and reduce it to very understandable and very memorizable, various statements that one can take with us throughout our day. And we've worked on the fundamentals, the preliminaries. I did give some teachings a number of weeks ago on the what's called the absolute enlightened mind, quite profound. And then get into what's called relative bodhicitta, which is, we might say, the world and how we go about it. There are those wonderful practices related to how to really cultivate a compassionate, altruistic mind state. And really, very practically, it has the practice of the what's called the taking and sending, the alchemical exchange, where one really learns very simple practices, how one can be present to suffering, one's own suffering and others' suffering. And rather than being easily kind of taken down by it or feeling a need to wall off from it, we have the means of instantaneously transforming it into something very positive, which is compassion. And then the next section is called the transformation of adverse conditions into the path of awakening. And I think a couple of weeks ago when I was here, I taught on that one. When evil fills the world and its inhabitants, change adverse conditions into the path of awakening. So again, I did give that commentary on that several weeks ago, and I'm sure it's on the website if you're interested. And also there's lots of commentaries. This is a very well-known text, and there are lots of commentaries available, both written and I'm sure on the web. Again, the key point is usually we see adversity, adverse conditions, as a roadblock to our awakening. And these profound teachings that say, you know, when adversity is in your life, when adversity is in the world, use that adversity to awaken. And again, very powerful teachings, especially for our times. As you might have noticed, there's lots of adversity filling the world. The world as a social organism, and the world very much personally these days. There's a lot of suffering going on. So learning how to not reject, or not have to run away from, or not be, again, overwhelmed by, but learning how to actually take it all in, knowing that you have the ability to transform it within your own mind and to be able to come back into the world in a very positive way. Now, what I want to, the next section is in terms of how do you carry these wonderful practices into your daily life. The next slogan is very simple and quite wonderful. It says, drive all blame into one. Now, does everybody know what blame is? Anybody here not know what blame is? Yeah. Blame is what? When we, what? Believe somebody or something is the cause of something. We blame them, don't we? And usually, we're always blaming who? Everybody else, right? I mean, we blame all the people who, right now who we think are causing suffering to ourselves, the world. We blame our families, our parents, our past. We blame our society. We blame all the people in it we don't like. I mean, we just blame. We blame social conditions, right? The list of who's to blame for my unhappiness, for my suffering is, you know, we could start writing it today and probably continue for years. And during the course of those years, we would gather many other ones to blame. So it would be quite a long list. And here is this slogan that says, drive all blame into one. Right? So I think it's wonderful because it acknowledges, that we're always looking for somebody to blame, right? It sort of acknowledges this basic desire we have. You know, I got to blame somebody for this, right? Is that true? Everybody know we got to blame somebody for what's going on within me, or in the world. There's only one thing to blame. So for those of you who love to blame and spend a lot of your life blaming, This is for you, because it'll make your life a lot easier. You don't have to think about all the people and conditions that are, causing you blame. You only have to remember one thing, okay? Is that clear? Now, what is this one thing that all blame needs to be driven into? All the sufferings I now experience are the result of all my self-centered actions. No one else is to blame. This ego-cherishing attitude of mine is to blame. Now, this is directed to the reader of this text, but it also relates to everyone in the world. So this is very important, and it gets really, again, right to the root of sort of the Buddhist way of looking at the world and causation and Buddhist psychology. You know, in the chant that you just heard, it said, "May I be liberated from the delusive self, liberated from the superiority, the inferiority, and the equality complex." So it's really saying the same thing. You know, why do we suffer? Why do human beings suffer? Why do human beings do all the terrible things that they do to one another? Why is that? And again, depending on what your viewpoint is, you could come up with a reason. And in this world, there are many, 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 many reasons that people come up with why the world is the way it is and why people do the things they do to each other. In Buddhism, the fundamental teaching is it is because we do not understand how things really are, and we are so identified with ourself as a discrete entity that stands apart from everything else. And not only do we perceive and identify ourselves as a separate self with its own special story, but we personify it, and over time we become its slave, because it is always giving us commands. Do this, don't do this, I need this, I must have that, I want this, keep that away from me, don't let that happen. I'm worried about this, I'm scared about that, I'm disappointed about this, I'm hurt when they did that. Think about all your suffering and connect it to the I statement, I, me, mine. Why do we suffer? Because we hear this voice, the voice of self, and it is always scanning the world with only one concern. What is that one concern? Me. This is very powerful. And it's not just that I'm doing it or you're doing that, everybody is doing that. Right? From the top to the bottom. Now, this text is, 1,500 years old. So don't think that we're unique today. You know, this is what human beings, unfortunately, have been up to. And the problem is, if we do not know causation, we cannot be free of what's being caused. You see, if we suffer, if we're unhappy, if we're disappointed, if we're hurt, if we're depressed, if we're anxious, if we're all those things, and if we don't know what's causing it, then we don't know how to solve the problem. Right? And sort of what's going on in this world is not really identifying what the problem. See, because we think the problem is what? Out there. And as long as I think the source of my suffering is out there, then I will always think that the way to stop suffering is to what? Is to control that. Right? And that could be, you know, the world. You know, we like to think about the world and how we'd like to control it. Or it can be about every person in my life and every situation in my life. But I am driven to continually obsess, focus, ruminate about the external world, because I think if I could only get the external world and everybody in it, you know, in line with my ideas of how the world should be, then I will be what? Happy. Can you see how that unfolds? The problem is, the source of our suffering is not out there. The source of our suffering lies within our own mind. And what is the cause of it? This mind that cherishes itself above all else. So, drive all blame into one means, if I want to blame something, either within myself or everyone else, why are they doing what they're doing? Because they're lost in their own egocentric world. Right? They're just trying to, you know, they think by getting their needs met or doing this or not doing that, you know, they're going to be happy. That's why they do what they do. They're not evil people. In Buddhism, we say they're deluded people. What are they deluded about? That they don't see clearly what's going on. Now, the teachings on non-self and all this is another talk. But it's, you know, again, it's at the basis of this. So this is this understanding that at the root of my suffering is my cherishing, my ennobling, my self-absorption. We are a very self-absorbed people. If you listened, if you broadcast your mind and your thoughts, what do you think you would hear all day? Really, that... I mean, what do you think we'd hear all day? Ourself endlessly doing what? What? Talking about itself, its needs, its wants, or talking about its opinion on everybody else. Right? I mean, that's what's going on all day. This self, totally self-centered and self-absorbed, thinking it is right, and you know what I mean, and everybody else is wrong, is endlessly reinforcing its view. Is that clear? And then we wonder why I'm not happy. Why I feel separate from people. Why I suffer. And we never tie these two things together. Now, fortunately, for thousands of years, there have been some very wise men and women who, you know, rather than looking out there for the cause of suffering, have looked within their own minds, from the Buddha on forward. And so we have many of these teachings and texts and practices that help us understand what's going on, and even more importantly, give us a technology to transform. Right? So it's not as if we all have to go through this, you know, laborious, deep looking into the nature of reality, the nature of things, it's already been done for us. But we do have to do it somewhat so we can become convinced ourselves, so we can change our lives. Again, there is nobody in this room who has not spent their life self-absorbed. Even if you think you're a good person and you have good ideals and blah, 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 you're still self-absorbed because you're very aware of how good you are and how bad everybody else is. And if only everybody was like me, then it'd be what? Nirvana. So when we receive these kinds of teachings, again, drive all blame into one. You see how powerful and simple that is? So as you hear your mind all day blaming, 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 you remember, drive all blames into one. What is that one? It's my self-cherishing, my grandiosity. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Grandiosity. What do we think about our ideas? What do you say, Kevin? Pretty good. Yeah, pretty great. Right? We love listening to ourselves. Right? Just brilliant. So incisive. So intelligent. You know, we're just can't get over it. How blessed we were, right, to have this mind that, you know, so great. The problem is what? Everybody else is doing the same thing. From the top to the bottom. Everybody thinks their views and their ideas are the right ones, the greatest ones, the best ones. And if only everybody else in the world would go along with it, then what? You see? So this may be a little bit of a wake-up call. But everybody else in your life thinks just like you. They hear a voice too that has needs and wants and is endlessly telling them what to do. They have their story. They have their history. They have their issues that are running them. Right? Just like yours are running you. So if you ever clash, if you ever realize, we're on different pages, don't be shocked. Don't be surprised. Don't be disappointed. Don't be angry. Be understanding. Oh, of course. Drive all blames into one. Here, there, everywhere. Now, it doesn't, please, for those of you who go, but hold on, aren't there bad things in the world? This is not about that. This is before you go out the door. How your mind is. This is very intimate. This is coming to an understanding within your mind. You know, I mean, it's amazing to me dealing with our people in our culture. We write a great, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about that? See? Because we're not comfortable turning the spotlight here. What we love to do is turn the spotlight out there. Right? We want to shine the light on everybody else. Everybody in our family, everybody in our relationships, everybody else in the world. We want to shine the light out there. Right? And we are not comfortable shining the light here first. So this is important. Why is it important? It's important for our own happiness. Because the way we do it does not produce happiness. Because the self is a tyrant. It is never satisfied. It could have told you to get this and get that and put this together and then you'll be happy. And as soon as that's over, it's got a new demand. Now you got to do this to be happy. Now you got to make this plan. Now you got to go there. Now you got to buy this. Now you got to get this person to like you. Now you got to get that person out of your life. I mean, it is endlessly barking its commands. Everybody know what I'm talking about. It's never satisfied. Now, there are psychological reasons why it's never satisfied, but we don't need to get into that. We can just acknowledge it's never satisfied. It doesn't matter how much pleasure you give it. And everybody in this room has spent a lot of their life trying to give a lot of pleasure to themselves. Is that true? Yeah. And yet here again, on a Sunday in April, if you listen to yourself, it's still telling you what it would like to do to give it pleasure today. Right? It's already probably has plans. Right? It never stops. You know, and you can't say to it, but hold on. I mean, didn't I fulfill all your plans for the last 30, 40, 50 years? Isn't that enough? No, not enough. You got to do it today. Why? Because I need this to be happy. I need this to feel fulfilled. I need this to feel like I'm a meaningful life. You see, it needs, it endlessly needs, wants, desires. And we never turn the spotlight and go, what is that? Which is another talk. What is that? That is endlessly dissatisfied. Drive all blames into one. Okay? Resolve that. And then you can go through the life very differently. Now, I'm just going to do one more because I think they go wonderfully together. And again, in the same way that drive all blame into one is like a, you know, it's a game changer, isn't it? It's like, whew, you mean I have to give up blaming? I mean, what would my mind think about all day? I mean, it's funny, isn't it? But it's, you know, it's like, you know, they talk about tragedy and comedy, you know, it's just like, it's the same story, but you look at it from this way, it's a tragedy. You look at it from this way, it's a riot. Drive all blame into one. Now, if that one gave you a problem, listen to the next one. As powerful. And this one only has four words. The other one had five words. This is even simpler, easy to memorize. Be grateful to everyone. Be grateful to everyone. It sort of goes very much with the first one. Again, it's not as if those of us sitting in this room do not know about gratitude. And we certainly have the people and the list of things that we would say, yeah, I feel grateful to them. But this doesn't say that. This is a whole nother level. Be grateful to everyone. Everyone includes who? Everyone. The ones who are kind with us, to us, and the ones who are unkind to us. Ones who do what we want and the ones who don't do what we want. The ones who think like we do and the ones who think very differently than we do. How can we be grateful to everyone? Is the challenge. These are challenges. Drive all blame into one, be grateful to everyone. These are challenges. They are challenges to the way we do life. But again, in a very personal way, they answer to everyone why, even though I've been doing it this way for my whole life, why is it not working? This has got to be, this is where you got to look deeply into yourself. Why is it not working? And that's very personal. So, be grateful to everyone. So let's work it. So let's take So the same way we would say, you know, is blaming oneself, blaming, you know, that kind of personal blaming, does that create a peaceful, calm, open, loving mind? Right? Blaming. Does that make you feel peaceful and happy? And you would say what? No, it creates an afflictive mind state. So from a very personal reason, you know, for wanting to have a calm, open, spacious, relaxed, loving mind, cultivating blame is not conducive to that, right? So there's a reason that when we see these kinds of teachings, we resonate. Now, let's try this one. So this goes the other way. When you're feeling grateful, when you're expressing gratitude, when you're in sort of that mind state of thankfulness for whatever, how does that feel? Would you say that's a positive or negative mind state? Okay, I mean, forgive, I'm not trying to talk down to you, but it's like we don't stop and ask ourselves these questions. Because we're floating around up here somewhere, thinking, interpreting, projecting. We don't go very simply, when I'm cultivating this mind state, how does it feel? You know, what am I cultivating in my mind when I cultivate endless blame? You see, what is that doing for me? Positive or negative? Helpful or unhelpful? Making me a better person? You know what I mean? Like that. Better friend, better whatever. So, when we hear this, be grateful to everyone, we ask ourselves, is gratitude a positive, wholesome mind state that is conducive to the kind of transformation that I want in my mind and in my relationship to others? And you would say what? Yeah, okay. I mean, see, I'm just trying to get you to buy in. So we got to buy in. So we got to slow it down. Now, obviously, people who are on the positive side of our life, to be grateful to them, that's easy, right? So we don't get any credit for that. Okay. It's the other ones, the other situations, the difficult people, the difficult situations, the things that happen that we don't want to happen, the people in our world and in the world that we don't want to be there. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. So that's where it gets interesting, because this says be grateful to everyone. And obviously our question is, what? One, we don't want to do that, right? But two, we can't figure out how to do it. So this is a very specific thing. And again, it comes down to this is internal. This is the transformation of your mind and developing what's called, you know, to be an awakened being in the world, a spiritual, courageous spiritual warrior in the world, or whatever you want to call it. It's like, what is the mind that can sustain our capacity to be in the world in this very compassionate, positive, wholesome way with the world as it is? With acknowledging there is so much adversity and negativity, whether in human beings or in situations in the world, okay? Work everywhere, you know. This is a teaching that goes, yes, this is the world. There's a lot of good, a lot of terrible. They're positive, they're adversive. Again, we don't have a problem with the positive, so that's why this text is not going on into that, right? People who are doing it just the way we want them to do we have a problem being grateful to them? No, unless we're a total narcissist, in which it's never good enough. But if we're not totally there, you know, with people and situations that are sort of going our way or meeting our needs, we often feel grateful, right? We even say now and then, thank you, right? Who knows? Now, how about all those people and situations that our natural response is not to say thank you to, right? To say the opposite, to be hurt and angry. Yeah, so it comes back to each of us and who we are and how we want to show up in the world. If we want to learn to show up in the world as loving, compassionate, understanding, wise, accepting, generous, you know, all the positive virtues. If we want that to be the way we show up in the world, then we have to transform the mind that is showing up in the world. And one of the things we have to get rid of is this, those I'm grateful to and those I'm ungrateful to. We have to free ourselves of that. Now, again, the problem is not on the positive side, the problem is on the aversive side. So the question is, in what way are aversive people and aversive situations beneficial to us? This is looking at it very differently. From the point of view of ego, who always is rigid, is always focused on one thing. My needs, my wants, my desires, my need to control and manipulate. That's the self, that's the ego, that's always its agenda. But if you want to develop a more selfless agenda, then learning to deal with aversive situations and people in a totally different way is something we need to learn. So again, the challenge is, how can you be grateful for difficult situations? How can you be grateful for situations that don't go our way? How can you be grateful to people that do things to us and others, you know, that are not good, cause pain, suffering? How could you possibly be grateful to them? Well, it's only in relationship to your desire to truly transform yourself into a total, you know, sort of person who lives life in a very much more awakened way, and that your heart and your understanding are much more, you know, sort of 360, not just piecemeal. So, how do aversive situations and aversive people help us develop love, understanding, patience, right? All you see, you know, all those virtues we want to develop? I have a lot of irritation in me. People are always irritating me. I don't like to be irritated all the time. I don't like to be angry all the time. How do I change? How do I become more understanding, more patient, more accepting of myself and others? What do you need to develop that? You need them. That's the key practice here. We need them. Right? Where else are we going to learn understanding and patience than with somebody that we're very impatient with? Where else are we going to learn to develop patience and understanding in situations if we don't have those kinds of situations? If you think you're going to learn it all through reading, if we think we're going to learn it all through reflecting on our cushion, you know, in the privacy of our own homes and meditation, no, we learn it in the world. And we learn it from people who bring it all that stuff up. There's nowhere else. So, we are grateful to the people who give us a hard time. We are grateful to aversive situations because It is giving us the opportunity to grow. Yeah. I don't want to understand their causes and conditions, do I? They're bad. Over here, the people we like, we're very understanding, right? I mean, they can be total whatever, but we're very understanding. They're our friends, they're our family, right? We understand them, we forgive them. Is that true? Right? But the same people over here, I don't want to understand them. I don't want to realize that they're just a product of their causes and conditions, and they really can't help being who they are. I only want to do it for the people I like, the people I agree with. You see? But if you want to really develop a greater impartiality so you can go through the world being of benefit to everyone, then you have to go, yeah, it's with aversive people and aversive situations, etc., those are the ones that are helping me. Therefore, Shantideva, the 8th century Buddhist master, said, yeah, on your altar, yeah, you can have your Buddhas and your Bodhisattva and all your beautiful enlightened beings, but put up your enemies too. Give them half the altar. Because they're the ones who are actually helping you develop. Much more than these, or at least equal, right? I mean, we might have had a difficult childhood, been exposed to people who are suffering, and they caused us suffering, right? Is that not true? How could we possibly be grateful to them, be grateful to everyone, right? Whew. Not them. How could we think about it? How could you be grateful to them? How could you be grateful to that suffering? That's a question. Can anybody think, how would you be grateful to them, rather than angry and hurt and disappointed? How could you use that circumstance to develop yourself? Yes. Is to think they did the best they could. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Yes. Well, that's, yeah. There it goes. So, if that didn't occur, if I hadn't been through that, who knows where I'd be? But now, you know, it's helped me. You know, when we see the dark path, we appreciate the light, right? When we've been in hell, we appreciate heaven. We never appreciated it before, but now we appreciate it, right? Again, you know, think of all our disappointments, all our hurts, all our anger at these people. We're just nurturing anger. That's the residue that we're left from these circumstances. Which only what? Continues what started in childhood. We just continue it on. Angry, hurt, disappointed. Now it's infected our minds. And maybe infected our relationships. Be grateful to everyone. I've learned a lot from that. I've learned a lot from that person. Whether I've learned that people are just who they are and they're doing their best, even though it shows up miserably. But also it showed me to want to do it differently. That's why we're grateful to them. That's why we're grateful. See, it's a different kind of gratitude, but it's sort of understanding that I can make use. Remember, this whole section is called Turn Adversity into the Path of Awakening. This is showing us how to do it. drive all blames into one. Be grateful to everyone, everything. Pretty absolute, isn't it? Everyone and everything. So that, you know, when you leave here today and you immediately find that you're not grateful to something, remember this. Oh, even this too. Right? Is an opportunity to cultivate patience, understanding, to let go of this imperious self that's always barking orders. If I wasn't in this situation right now, hearing this voice so strongly, I probably would never deal with it. But now I understand. So I realize these are very easy practices, but just in case anybody may have a view about this or a comment on this, or most importantly, a question. But I'm very happy if you want to challenge this, that's fine too. So the important thing now, any questions about what this practice means or looks like, and how you take it home with you, practice it in your real life. Yes. So did everybody hear that? So that's a good, again, that's an extreme response you're giving. So I understand that, but it's good. Yeah, I know, but it's good. Yeah, well, again, what it says is, and her question was, well, what if somebody kills your child? Or let's say your child dies in an accident or something, how could one be grateful to that? So again, it's not that kind of gratitude. It's not like, it's not like you're not a human being and you don't feel sadness and loss, but it's like, how does it leave us, and how do we use that experience, right, not to increase our suffering over time, but to use it to transform? So, somebody murders your child, right? What could be, more difficult to get one's head around than that? Big picture. Do people kill each other in this world? Do they? Does it happen all the time? Is that the way of the world? Is it? It shouldn't be, I hear you, but I'm not asking you whether it should be or shouldn't be. Is that not the way of this world, unfortunately? Yeah, and then it happens to us. Why do people kill each other? Drive all blames into one. Because they're deluded, they're unhappy, they're sick, right? They're not healthy. Healthy people with healthy minds don't kill each other, do they? No. Unhealthy people with unhealthy minds do harm to each other. That's just unfortunately the way of the world for many people. The situation reminds me of that. That's what I'm grateful to. It's you can hold them at the same time. A lot of us, we think, does that mean, I can't in the short run be angry and hurt and sad? Well, of course, we're human. but it's sort of like, what's the residue? How do I use this experience to deepen my understanding? You know? And maybe to find a, you know, a positive response to help heal the world and people like that. So it's not simplistic. Yeah, it's deep. And again, the more you get into those kinds of things, you realize, phew, this is profound. This is not easy. You know, with certain kind of situations, well, you know, traffic or waiting out loud, I get it. But there's lots of, you know, we got to work our way out here. Yeah, it's a reminder. I'd forgotten. You know, let's say you're a mother and it happens to you. You go, oh, you know, I read about this every day in the news. Civilian casualties, famines, you know, mothers holding their emaciated child, you know. And we look and we feel bad, but then it happens to us and we go, oh, that must be what it's like. You see? A deepening and an opening we didn't have before. So, you know, it's, yeah, so it's nuanced, this gratitude. It's a willing to accept the adversity of the world and use the adversity of the world, especially when it comes into our little personal world, to transform, to wake up. Yes, you had a question. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You remove yourself from the situation. Yeah, yeah. Is what? Yeah, so the question is, well, what if you're in those situations with a very aversive situation where those kinds of repetitive, ungrateful thoughts of anger and hurt, and I can't believe this, you know, is it okay to withdraw? Of course, it's always okay to do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself, okay, in the short run. But this is about the mind. So even though strategically you may feel I need to withdraw myself. You know, it's what the residue of that situation. You know, when you study trauma and when you study post-trauma, there is a reason why thoughts of the situation are repetitive. Anybody have an idea why that is? Well, it's not even, yeah, but when you say work it out, it's because the mind will not accept what happened. So it is always replaying it over and over, day after day, year after year, decade after decade, all because we cannot accept that what happened, happened. So we replay it over and over and over. But what if we didn't, what if we accepted, yes, it happened, right? It's this way, you see? They may, yeah, so it's about, again, fundamentally this is about our mind and how do we create a wholesome mind to take into the world. And even in this situation, you know, which I don't even know about. But obviously, whatever this person is, they are suffering. All right? There are causes and conditions that are causing them to show up in this world. And so you can still strategically do what you need to do, but in your heart, you can have compassion and understanding. And realize, if you're somebody, let's say, who wants to be a more compassionate person, perhaps you do, you might go, Yeah, this situation is taking my practice of compassion and understanding to a whole new level. It's not like you're looking for it, you know, it's not like you're going to go out there and look for it, but it'll come to us. And when it comes, that's part of the gratefulness. It's a different kind of gratefulness than we feel when somebody does something nice for us, you see? So we have to understand that this is like, I'm grateful because they're really giving me, this situation is giving me an opportunity to grow or to get more insight into myself or see how I cause myself suffering, you know, how I just ruminate. Why do you ruminate about the situation? Because what? Well, no, you can't accept it. And you think you should resolve it. What's there to resolve? See, that's our thinking mind. We're always thinking, oh, I've got to figure this out, got to resolve it. The first thing we got to do is understand what's going on and be present to it. Right? And see, in this situation, they're suffering. They're suffering. I'm suffering. Oh. See, that's reality. That's not up here. We're endlessly processing up in our thinking consciousness when reality is what's happening. And we want to be present to it. Yeah. Just suffering here. Can you see that? Oh, and that's when you touch that level, then things open up. They're suffering, I'm suffering. Oh. Then afterwards, you know, what can be done here that will reduce the suffering? That's all. You know? Distancing, separation, that could be, you know, that's like, but that's a response. You see, from this acknowledgement, it's suffering. See, that's when you get beyond the blame. See, but usually we go into blame. I can't believe they're doing this, and they shouldn't do this, and they know better, and you know, it's blame, 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 blame. Rather than just going, oh, there's suffering here, and there's cause. Can you see how easier that is? And it feels, it's more open. And there's possibility of things changing when we're present to reality. Not thinking about it, right? It's like we're these compulsive problem solvers. You know, what do they say? You know, to a carpenter who only has a hammer. You know, it doesn't matter what it is; everything's a nail, right? But that's all they got, right? Even screwdrivers, yeah, I mean, even screws they're nailing in. You know, it's like, right? And we're like that. We're just problem solvers, fixers, figure-outers, endlessly, no matter what happens, we're always up here, rather than just being present to reality. There's suffering here. I'm suffering. They're suffering. First thing to do, how can I take care of my suffering and use this situation to develop myself? Secondly, they're suffering. What can I do that might be skillful? There may not be anything. Is there anything I can do? But you see how easier that is? Not so intense. You see, when you think you've got to figure it out and do something, then it's what? Intense. Very tight. Okay? Yes. Oh yeah, well we're all pretty good at it.
And I also very familiar with blaming myself.
Yeah.
So I guess what I just want some clear understanding
from lacking is how do I prevent myself from blaming myself? Okay, so there's a family program today, so the kids will be coming in soon. So we only have a couple of minutes. We have to understand that when we talk about self, we're talking about a generic formation, a misperception that there is a permanent, solid self within you. What we have done, not only do we have that delusion, but we've personified it. In your case, You've taken this generic self and you've turned him into Ryan, right? So when this says drive all blame into one, it is the self. This false belief that I'm a separate self and this identification with this story of Ryan. It's not Ryan. Ryan is the victim of the self. Right? You're the victim of that voice that's endlessly telling you what to do and who you should blame and who's the cause. That's the one to blame for your suffering. You're the victim. Is that clear? Drive all blames into one is just, you know, self-centeredness. Maybe that's another way. Egocentricity. Drive all blame, and you know, it's like, you know, wherever you're suffering, it's because self is up to something. Self doesn't like what's going on, right? Wants things to be different. Barking commands. Can you see? It's not about you. And that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because that can be very confusing. Yeah, I mean, so this is not blaming you. This is, you know, is understanding, you know, causes and conditions and misidentifications. That's what's causing me to suffer. When you understand clearly what the cause is, then you know how to liberate yourself. You're the victim too. Okay? That's important. Thank you. So thank you all. Drive all blame into one. Be grateful to everyone. You just take those two and just work with them. See what happens. And, you know, be willing to challenge yourself.